We're going to have problems here with this microphone. I can tell that right away. It reminds me of something else, which I ain't going to talk about. Welcome to the Lou Boss Traveling Tradition Sideshow. My name's Tom Brady, Jr., and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tom.
And I see a lot of friends here. When I take my glasses off so I can see this, I won't be able to see any of you, so I want to make you all out right now. I want to thank you for asking me to do this, Lou. I am glad that we're doing this. I would hope that we'd repeat it again and again and again, so we won't always be singing to the choir. And I'd like to see this be an ongoing thing. I don't know if y'all thought about that. I got my questions about some of the other presenters you've had here, though. I'll tell you that right now. I mean, when you got to drag Fred Gallagher out of the basement over at Goodwill Publishing in Gastonia, you're digging deep, I'm telling you that. And Randy Thornton, the Morganton Flash, you're going to do Crawford, have you done one yet?
No.
You're not going
to
do one?
I think the better ones to the end.
That means you won't be following me, right? I've been asked to talk on the eighth tradition tonight. Every time I get back in these things, it seems like your perception begins to change. And in doing all the reading and everything I did, I prepared for this more than I prepared for most things that I do. I don't know why, I just did, and I was nervous, still nervous, you know. Because it's important, I guess. And I got to reading through this stuff and some lights went on that hadn't gone on before. And some of the things I bring out tonight about this tradition, y'all may firmly disagree with. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, that is okay. Because that makes for more questions, more discussion, and it throws more light on what's going to happen. Whatever I say to you tonight, of course, is my opinion. And my opinion is subject to change by, you know, by 8:30. or even before. And I've tried to base my opinion, however, on, you know, the primary source materials of our program, Big Book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and the 12 and 12, which speaks eloquently to the traditions. AA Comes of Age was a wonderful book, which if you haven't read, it's a brief history of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a really a good book to read, especially about the traditions. And about the history of this program. History means a lot to me because I'm one of those guys that like to know that I'm standing on solid ground. And as I go through the history of Alcoholics Anonymous and I see some of those who fed into what is now Alcoholics Anonymous, I know that I'm standing on solid ground. You don't get any more solid ground than with Carl Jung, for instance. You just don't get any more solid than that. And William James and Sam Shoemaker and Richard Peabody, who some of you may not be familiar with. You just don't get any more firm ground than you do with these God-connected people. And I think we need to remember, this is a God-connected program. My opinion, I believe with all my heart, God created this program. And He created this program for one single purpose. And I think as long as we stick to that purpose, we'll be doing what God created this program for us to do. And we'll be what God created this program for us to become. And so I'm real serious about these things, and I think we spend much too little time on these things. I personally am very grateful for the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. These things are vital to me. And vital is an interesting word, Fred. You probably know what it means. It means necessary to life. So when I say these traditions are vital to me, Billy, I mean they're necessary for my life. I kind of was thinking today, I'm alive and sober not just because of the steps, as wonderful as the steps may be, but tailor the traditions. I'm alive and sober today because of the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. If we didn't have those, when I was wandering around Charlotte on 5 years probation without a driver's license in July of 1965, and I had finally decided as much as I could, I did not want to die. It was traditions that made it possible for me to walk in the back door of the Myers Park Baptist Church to the Queen City Group. Had we not had the traditions, that group may not have been there. I don't know if y'all have thought about these things, you know. And I'm just so grateful that it was there. even though some of them shook their heads when they saw me coming. And when they found out who it was, hell, all of them shook their heads. We might not have groups to attend if it weren't for the traditions. Think about that. As many groups as we have in Charlotte now, we might not have groups to attend were it not for the traditions. And when I say this, I'm not downplaying the steps in any way. You know, the steps are designed to give me life, and a sober life, and a good life. Traditions are designed in every way to provide a framework in which I may live that life in concert with my fellow human beings instead of having to live it alone like I did for my first 30 years. That means a lot to me. It means a lot to me that the first word in the first step is we, and the first word in the first tradition is a derivative of the word we. This is a we world that I live in now. But Bert, I didn't live in it for a long time. I was in it, but I was not of it. I was surrounded, you know, by this thin candy shell. And nobody got close to me because I was afraid of them. And when I came here, because the program was here and let a few of them in, I found out I had been cheating myself a great deal by not putting them in. So I'm grateful to the bottom of my heart for the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship. It's been called that. It's called that in our purpose and everywhere else. A fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strengths, and hope. What makes a fellowship? Y'all ever thought about that? My friend Martin Buber, the Jewish philosopher, says a fellowship is formed when a group gathers around what he calls a living center, what we call one purpose. Anytime that we have a group that gathers around and they're focusing in on one thing, not their differences, nothing else like that, but they're focusing on one central idea which they all can embrace and believe in, you have a fellowship. And our common purpose is what gives us that fellowship. It's on page 17 in the book Alcoholics Anonymous when it says, we're men and women who normally wouldn't mix. I wouldn't be with Crawford for nothing in the world. You know? But we're held together, it goes on to say, and I'm not even trying to quote it exactly, a bond, you know, that bonds us together. And that bond is that we have a common problem and we have a way out on which we can absolutely agree. Many of the guys will say, common problem, common solution. As long as we focus on those things, as long as we all have a common problem and we agree thoroughly on that solution, we have a fellowship. When we do not have those who embrace either one of these, we will have a gang. Is that clear? And I'm for this fellowship. And one of the reasons this fellowship is going to continue to exist, at least in my mind, and with all the influence that I may or may not have, is we're going to stick to that common purpose. What preserves the fellowship? That's where traditions come in. I believe it's abiding by principles derived from experience of that fellowship and the experience of others outside that fellowship. Our traditions were built on mistakes, y'all. Mistakes that were made, mistakes that were thought about and almost made. You know? Just as our lives are rebuilt, Fred, out of the mistakes we made. I think I've grown more in this program out of my character defects, and there were a lot of them. And trying to live my way through and out of those through accepting them first, and then moving through them, I've grown more from that than any successes I've ever had. Success is like a will-o'-the-wisp, you know. Character defects tend to hang on for a long, long time. And they're the building material. This is the beauty of the way God works. And they're the building material of this fellowship. This room is full of congenital screw-ups. Do you understand what I mean? Absolutely full. You may be an exception, but I doubt it. The moment you say you're an alcoholic, what you're saying, I am a congenital screw-up, okay? And that gives me great potential. Think what it would be like to be perfect. None of us are going to do that. Wouldn't that be boring? What am I going to do today? Be perfect. What goals do I have? None. I'm already perfect. What am I going to do tomorrow? Nothing, because I'm still going to be perfect. But if you get up in the morning and you say, Randy gave me a prayer a while ago. Let me read this prayer. He said it fit me. I don't believe this, but dear God, so far today I've done all right. I haven't gossiped. I haven't lost my temper. I haven't been grumpy, nasty, or selfish, and I'm really glad of that. But in a few minutes, God, I'm going to get out of bed. And from then on, I'm probably going to need a lot of help. Thank you. Amen. You know? Now, that gives you something to shoot for during the day, doesn't it? The minute you get out of bed, you know you got something to move out of and move towards, you know? So what preserves a fellowship is the imperfection of its members. Plus, these principles that are derived from experience, usually based on mistakes, of the fellowship and those outside the fellowship. The 12 traditions are such principles. Some people thought these were unnecessary. Did y'all realize that? Did you realize there were some people who couldn't stand Bill Wilson or anything he stood for? They thought he was a controlling, manipulating egomaniac. And he was. He couldn't have built this program unless he had been. That's what I'm talking about. You grow with those defects. And he realized it and he admitted it. He talked much about his egomania. Maybe that was his biggest weakness, but the other side is maybe that was his greatest strength. And so some people didn't want to hear anything about these things. They thought them unnecessary. Some people laughed at these traditions, these ideas, before and after they were adopted. I had the great pleasure of having to do for many months around Charlotte one time with a fellow who had more sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous than anybody else. And he was a wonderful man. And he was a brilliant man. And he could just put this program across in such terms it would make your skin, you know, crawl. Chill bumps, man. Powerful, charismatic guy. But he laughed at the 12 traditions. Who ever heard he said of unity among a bunch of drunks? You know, that's Bill Wilson stuff. And this man's fatal flaw was a deep and abiding resentment for Bill Wilson and anything he ever did. He laughed at anonymity. I went into a town to talk one time, and his picture was on the front of the newspaper. How he had founded Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's a sermon right there, you know, about why we need these traditions. But he didn't realize that. And he's a wonderful man. I'm not taking anything away from him. But he had that fatal flaw, Randy. And it held him back, I think, from what he could be. If he could have accepted that flaw. Man. Some people didn't want to hear about him. I got an old friend in Oklahoma who's been sober 3 days longer than God. And Earl remembers Bill Wilson coming through and he wanted to talk about these traditions. And people said, Bill, we don't want to hear about that. Tell us the bedtime story. That's what they call the story of his spiritual experience, the bedtime story. Don't talk to us about that stuff. We're not interested in that. Tell us the bedtime story. You know? Thank God Bill persisted. Maybe God had a hand in it. I believe it did. What's the purpose of the 12 traditions? You've probably talked about this before. I think we need to talk about it again. Maybe get a different perspective. You know, we've had a lot of people talking on these things, which is a good idea. Because we get all kinds of perspectives around here, you know. And we differ in so many ways. And the beautiful part about it is, you know, sometimes we differ in harmony. Sometimes we differ in disharmony. But we all are gathered around that living center. Common problem and common solution. And we ain't going away for nothing. We'll solve our differences eventually. So you get different perspectives on things. I think the basic purpose of the 12 traditions is to preserve the integrity of Alcoholics Anonymous and thus ensure its continued survival. to preserve the integrity of Alcoholics Anonymous and thus ensure its continued survival. This directly affects you. It directly affects me, the survival of Alcoholics Anonymous. It directly affects those who are yet to come. Suppose when they get ready and they're walking around looking for help, that the meeting is not there. So the survival of AA is paramount. Bill made that clear in his writings on the 12 traditions. You know, if AA doesn't survive, none of us will. None of us will. So the traditions, again, are vital. They've been vital to AA. They're vital to you, to me, and to those people yet to come. Now, why did they come into being? Why are they necessary? Good question, isn't it? Like, to ensure that AA would continue in being and doing what God created it to be and do, and to hold AA to its one and only purpose, and to help Alcoholics Anonymous withstand pressure from outside and inside to change that purpose. For years, Alcoholics Anonymous has been under enormous pressure from agencies and institutions on the outside to change itself to fit their needs, to move away from that primary purpose, if you will, to accept those who are not alcoholics and don't necessarily embrace this thing. It's almost like, I believe, many of these institutions and facilities have disrespected Alcoholics Anonymous to the max. They want us to change to fit their needs. What happens to our integrity if we do that? What happens to that living center, Keith, if we do that? It's not going to be there anymore. I think, too, we have the traditions to keep us from destroying ourselves from the inside, as many other good groups have done. People have already talked to you about the Washingtonian movements. You know, six drunks sitting in a bar in 1840. They said, let's don't drink no more. You know? And they didn't. And they gathered a group around them. Not all these people were alcoholics. There were non-alcoholics. There were heavy drinkers. There were some alcoholics. They signed pledges. They met in community. And they testified. As we do. You know, Monday and Friday, Twin City Group. I don't know if you know, you're hearing somebody stand up front testifying, bearing witness, if you will, in Oxford Group terms, to the change that has happened in their life. And they testified, and they had a good thing going. And their numbers increased and increased and increased and increased and increased. And then they got away from their purpose. They got personalities into it. A couple of very strong, charismatic personalities. One going this way and one going that way. And another going this way. And people looked and said, what do they stand for? What is their purpose? Do they have a primary purpose anymore? Or have they turned into a gang? And by 1847, they were gone. The Oxford Group. Wonderful, wonderful. I wouldn't be here today but for the Oxford Group. Bird, you wouldn't be here for the Oxford Group. The four absolutes, but more important, the four practical spiritual activities from which our 12 steps are derived. Surrender, sharing, restitution, and guidance. Those were the four practical spiritual activities. And from those you can extrapolate every single one of our 12 steps. All of them. They are part of our foundation, and they were powerful. In the beginning, they were called the first century Christian movement. Does that scare some of you? But they were doing Jesus stuff, not theological stuff. They were helping one another. What more for free? You know? They were in community because they had a common center. Their belief, their faith in that higher power that they called Jesus Christ. Strong movement of people. You know? And then they all of a sudden started going after key personalities. Y'all ever heard about going after key personalities? We want to up, what? The ego of this organization. We want to up our status. They even courted Adolf Hitler. Frank Buckman, the founder, did. He figured if I change Hitler, the world will notice that boy. And he was a powerful man, a charismatic man. When he died, he was eulogized by 52 congressmen up in Washington. Whatever that means. And the Oxford Group still exists. Small pockets of it are around here and there, you know. But for all intents and purposes, it lost its power. Because they got into personalities over principles. Basically, that was it. They got into personalities over principles. Just in my time in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've seen this happen. Not in this fellowship, necessarily, although it's happening in this fellowship, make no mistake about it. As one who has been out there on the convention circuit for 30 years, we better be damn careful. Because we're certainly putting personalities over principles. I won't get into that. If I get into that, that'll take 2 hours. That's the reason I send Crawford when they call me. I'm serious about this. You know, we get away from this primary purpose. These conventions are celebrations, man. That's what they are. But I'm an alcoholic. I love celebrations. So what am I going to do? I'm going to overdo it. And so we got 207 conventions every weekend. And a group of about 30 or 40 of us that go around talking all of them. I got a call tonight. The word's out. I'm not talking in 98 on the convention circuit. I may never do it again. So a guy called me and asked me about 2,000. Another one called this afternoon. Billy, how about 1999? I said, somewhere I read this is a day at a time program. We're getting carried in that direction. Let's don't go for it. Let's remember that every one of us that stands up there is an anonymous alcoholic. God, what a good feeling to be an anonymous alcoholic, to go in a group somewhere where nobody knows me. That sounds strange to you? And not have to say nothing. The traditions are there to keep AA from destroying itself, to learn from the experience of others, to learn from AA's own mistakes. They tried to make a lot of them in the beginning. They were going to do hospitals, education, research. They were going to do it all. But they didn't. Usually because of the group conscience. And a lot of us are deluded about that. We think the group conscience is a majority vote. I'm sorry, it's not. The group conscience may be that one person that votes against it. So help me God. And we've been saved so many times in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous by a minority. Not a majority. But the others realized that was God speaking His will through these people in the minority over here. That the majority is not always right. How many of y'all have been involved in situations in your group where you rushed on with the majority and 6 months later you say, why did we do that? Old Sam was right. We don't like Sam, you know. His feet stink. But he was right. I think Bill and the others wanted to make sure we didn't make these mistakes. So they brought all the mistakes together, you know, and kind of set some principles up around us to keep us from making those mistakes. And I swear we find ways to make them anyway, don't we? That's our nature. That's our nature. Take it or leave it. If we got a good thing going, our nature says, mess it up. I think the traditions are there to preserve that we by deflating the I in all of us. You know, 12 steps certainly deflate the ego. But the 12 traditions do too. What other outfit do you know where the group is more important than the individual? Does that deflate your ego? What do those traditions deal with? I'm just going to take one tack tonight. They deal with a lot of things, but I'm going to take one tack. I think when we boil it all down, every single tradition that's been talked about and will be talked about deals with the separation of the spiritual from the material. let me repeat that. I think every one of them has been talked about and will be talked about, deals essentially with the separation of the material from the spiritual. You see, the material, we usually think money. It not only has to do with money, but with other ego-aggrandizing things. But the material has to do with power. The material has to do with prestige, control, organization, rules, getting. All of that's the material, not just money. Money's just a symbol for most of it. And sometimes the other things are more dangerous than getting money, like control, like power, like prestige, and the drive for those. The spiritual embraces the opposite of these things. You ever notice that? The opposite of them. We're a poor organization or fellowship, and we intend to stay that way. We're told in these traditions we should have the least possible organization. That no one of us is in control. Go right down the line. Check traditions 1 to 12 when you go home tonight and see what I mean. Their basic and essential purpose is to separate the material from the spiritual. Yeah, even the first one, Keith. Even the first one. Because if the material has to do with control, if it has to do with ego aggrandizement, if it has to do with these other things that I mentioned, even the first one, especially the second one, third one, round down the line. Check them out. Study of these things does me a lot of good. I don't know about you. One of the groups that I love to attend is the Basics 2 over in Belmont on Thursday night. They always talk about a tradition and a step. And sometimes, believe it or not, they take the whole meeting on a tradition if it gets going good. I like that. Because we're talking about spiritual principles, whether we're talking about a step or a tradition. We're talking about life-saving, vital spiritual traditions. And tradition 8, I finally got around to it. Fred said, when's he going to get there? When's he going to get there? Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. But our service centers may employ special workers. This obviously deals with material and spiritual, doesn't it? Just like 7 very obviously deals with material and spiritual. I think its purpose is to differentiate between the professional, that is the material, and 12-step work, the spiritual. And to clarify what 12-step work really is, and to clarify how these two, as diametrically opposed as they are, can fit together. Bill picked himself a piece of work when he went in this one. It's a tough one. Why did it come into being? You know? Why should AA remain forever non-professional, but our service centers employ special workers? It came into being, the first reason was, you know, and I said these things were usually based on our experience and the experience of others, so let's talk about AA's own experience. Let's talk about the experience we gained from others. It may seem remote, but any of y'all remember when Bill and Bob and some of them went to see John D. Rockefeller and they wanted a bunch of money? You know? And Rockefeller considered it and he came back and he said a strange thing. I think money will ruin this thing. This is based on freely give what you have freely received. If we put money into that equation, it's going to louse it up. So we learned something from that experience. They didn't like it, but they learned something. It took a second shot at Rockefeller, too, and still didn't get much money, you know? But what they got was big books sent to all the leaders of industry. What they got was headlines in New York newspapers, which is more valuable. So we learned from him. We learned from the failure of paid professionals with alcoholics. Now, Bill says it out loud in the 12 and 12. Read it. Almost no success, he said, of the professionals in working with alcoholics. Almost none. Any of y'all ever hear of the Emmanuel movement? The Emmanuel movement was started in 1908 in Boston, the Emmanuel Church, thus the name. It was started by two preachers and a psychiatrist who were going to mix the best in religion and science to bring help to people with neuroses, okay? And they included us as neurotics. I don't understand why. And they impacted us greatly, too. I don't know if you know that. There's a book called The Common Sense of Drinking, which was written by one of those fellows, Richard Peabody. And Bill plagiarized most of what we know about alcoholism in the big book from that book, The Common Sense of Drinking. Do you know that? How do you like this for a statement out of that book? Half measures are to no avail. How much did Willie change that one? Once a drunkard, always a drunkard. How much did he change that one, Bill? You know? We're not pure as the driven snow. None of us. You get a good idea, run with it, baby. And they impacted us greatly, you know? And the first recovered alcoholic that they know of in history to work with other alcoholics as a counselor for a fee was a fellow named Courtney Baylor. Okay. And Richard Peabody followed him. And they worked with others for a fee, all right? And they actually got some people sober. They even had a group, a precursor of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you will, called the Jacoby Group Club. And these alkies got together and shared their experiences together. Don't know how long it lasted. The Emmanuel movement is pretty well forgotten now. You know, when a person pays for help, think about it. He is in control. You counsel me, and once I give you that $50, that's all for you, baby. We're even. We are even. When I go to you on a 12-step call, you owe me. And you can't ever pay me back. And the only way you can ever pay me back is by giving away what I've given you again and again and again and again without end. They found out, too, that psychological help was not enough. As strange as it may seem, Fred, even though this group started in a church with two ministers, in their therapy programs, there was no mention of God. None. I'm one of those who believes when you leave God out of the equation, you have no equation. Hate to talk about this, but our experience with treatment centers makes it clear that sobriety cannot be bought. Sorry about that. That's putting it pretty bluntly. Because only those, in my experience anyway, who become AA members stay sober. Remember when Lisa went through Charlotte Treatment Center? 65 people. After 1 year, 64 of them were drunk. Okay? And that's a good place. I'm not knocking it. But I believe, like Willie says, when he goes to a place as an EAP, can you turn out good members of AA? Because that's their salvation. Another reason why Tradition 8 came into being was the experience of AA itself. You know, AA was having great success by giving for free. Versus that lack of success for a fee. Charlie Towns knew that Bill was broke and hurting. He offered him a job. Come on up here and be a lay therapist, you know? You and Lois need some money, you know? You got a bunch of drunks staying at the house. You got no money. She's working at that department store. Consider you. Put yourself in his position for a minute. Money? And he said, yeah, we'll split the money here. Use this thing of yours, because it's working. And the thing was what was to become Alcoholics Anonymous. Remember that. And Bill, being a good alcoholic, he wanted that. Being a really good alcoholic, he even justified it with Scripture. On the bus, on the way home, he's talking to himself, oh, the workman is worthy of his hire. That's in the Scripture, therefore, you know, it's okay. And he got home and he got a message from his little group there. Bill, we know you're hurting. We know Lois is hurting. We know you're in bad shape, but you can't do this. You cannot hook this thing up with a professional. You cannot be a professional therapist with this program, because it'll ruin the program and it won't work because it's a spiritual thing. So Bill heard the group conscience, blessed his heart, and he turned it down. He didn't like it, but he turned it down. How about later on, our experience of AA itself, this tradition came into being. Bill was getting royalties on the book that he wrote. A lot of people really raised the roof about that, you know. There was a group of them that thought him and Dr. Bob were making thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars and hiding it away. They even got an accountant and met with him in a big town in Ohio and accused him of it. You're making money off this deal. That's not right. Plus, I ain't getting any of it. Another reason for this tradition, we needed secretaries. You know, when them letters started coming in, who's going to answer those letters? Who's going to answer those phone calls? Things they never expected. They had to set up a little office. Somebody had to man that office. You know? And they needed them. And people started hollering, "Now I'd be making money out of AA. Can't do that." They needed paid workers in their service centers. The classic story in AA Comes of Age is the story of old Tom, you know, up at the 24th Street Clubhouse in New York, and he was a retired fireman. And they need somebody to clean up the place because drunks were coming in there at night and messing it up. So they ask old Tom, "If we give you a room to stay in, it's a nice room, would you clean up the place?" He said, "How much are you going to pay me?" They said, "We're not going to pay you anything. We're going to give you a room." He said, "You don't want a janitor, don't you?" And they said, "Yeah." He said, "How much are you going to pay the janitor?" You know? The workman is worthy of his hire, isn't he, Keith? And they had that experience with old Tom, and that's a classic story that they use about it, you know? He said, I'll talk to all the drunks you want me to. I'll do all the 12-step work you want me to for free, but I ain't going to be your janitor unless you pay me something." And then they paid him the very lowest amount he would accept. People going to work in the field of alcoholism, people saying, "Professional, professional. They're professionalizing alcoholics now. They're making money out of AA." Marty Mann goes to Yale, Yale School of Alcohol Studies, you know. A great deal to spread the message about what was going on. Later, the National Council on Alcoholism. She was assailed from all sides for making money out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what she was trying to do was say, "Look, y'all, we have discovered something here. First, we've discovered what's wrong with us, and y'all haven't known that. You've been researching it for years. We've discovered that. Want to share that with you. Want to share that with the world. We've also discovered how to get well from this deal. That's an important thing, because a lot of us are dying, you know? And y'all can't seem to help us. We want to get that word out, not just to you, but to the world." And she was roundly and soundly damned for doing this by a lot of people. Were all these things I just talked about, the success of AA, Towns offered a bill, Bill's book royalties, need for secretaries, paid workers, people going into the field, was that making money in AA or out of AA? That's when you get to the crux. This obviously needed to be clarified. So Alcoholics Anonymous clarified it in Tradition 8. How'd they do it? Take this mess, Keith, and clarify. First, they said that in Tradition 8, that those who work, whose work was in support of 12-step work, secretaries, janitors, and so on, should definitely be paid for their work. Second thing they said, AA members should never be paid for 12-step work. And to wrap it all up, they defined what 12-step work really is. And the words that I was reading today in a couple of the materials that I was reading was 12-step work is defined as carrying the message to an alcoholic person to person and face to face. Carrying the message to an alcoholic, person to person and face to face, is the essence of 12-step work. Now, in our day, this could include 12-step work, 12-step calls, you know, that we used to go on a lot, you know. It can also include sponsorship. I think it can also include speaking at meetings, you know, bearing witness. All right? But that's 12-step work. Now, because of Tradition 8, old Tom and the secretaries, all could be paid, and Bill could receive his royalties for the book. Not from AA, but as the author of that book. The secretaries receive money not for doing 12-step work, but for answering the phone and typing the letters. Old Tom receives some pay as a janitor, but not for any 12-step work that he might be doing. Is this coming across? It's hard sometimes, very intricate when you get into this thing sometimes to get it out there. But you remember one thing. Bill Wilson did not go to work for Charlie Towns. See? Because he would indeed have been doing 12-step work for pay. Material transactions are always for a fee. Spiritual transactions, as God is my witness, are and must be always free. Material transactions are paid for once and for all. Spiritual transactions can be taken care of only by giving away what has been given to you, as I said again and again and again. And that's where that line comes in for us. Freely you have received, freely give. No fee, free. Let's take some actual looks at the application of Tradition 8. Let me ask you some questions here. And this is where you see how intricate this thing can be. Are those people who work at General Service Office, at Metrolina Intergroup, who are paid with AA funds, making money from AA? Yes. Yes, they're making money from AA. But does this mean they're violating Tradition 8? Absolutely not. Not a one of them that I know of is being paid for any 12-step work. They're being paid with AA funds. So yeah, they're making money from AA. Okay? Isn't that something? Kind of throws it in a different light, doesn't it? But they're not violating this tradition, in my opinion. Unless and until they accept some money for face-to-face, person-to-person, carried a message to an alcoholic. How about AA tapers? There's an interesting one. Who make tapes at all these conventions and stuff, you're excluded tonight. and sell these tapes to AA members. Are they making money from AA? Certainly they are. Ain't ever thought about that one, have you? Certainly they are. Does this mean they're violating Tradition 8? To answer, we need to ask ourselves if they're being paid for 12-step work. As it's defined. Okay. Are they? Good question, isn't it? My opinion is they're not. I know too many of them who do too much 12-step work. Okay. How about those making their living as professionals in the field of addictions, they call it now? They really catch it. Are they indeed violating the eighth tradition? You know, I work in the field. I wouldn't admit that in the AME, but I'll admit it here. I have a master's degree in counseling. I have 15 years of educational experience at Central Piedmont College, where I was a teacher and administrator. I went into the field in 1979. I counseled alcoholics. I was paid. I wrote a recovery curriculum, which is still in use, you know, in our prisons and a lot of other places across the country. Later on, I wrote another book. Somebody was telling me tonight he saw one of my tapes down at Dilworth Center, you know. He said, "You must have made it." And I said, 16 years ago, you know. and there's some more recent ones. But in every one of those efforts as a professional, as God is my witness, I have tried my very best not to break my anonymity. Okay. I have never said that I know of in one of those things, I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You'd have to be the village idiot not to know it. But I've never said that. I've got the credentials to work in the field. Me and Bill Crawford pretty soon are going to be certified clinical addiction specialists. Woo! And neither one of us could help a crack addict if he peed on our lap, you know? But we don't be certified. I was certified before in another place, a nut ward over at the Veterans Hospital. I was certified as manic depressive, you know? But here's the point. Most of all of what I know and believe about alcoholism, Fred, I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. There is no getting away from it. And I do workshops mainly now and training, you know, and education for patients. And when I do that, this knowledge that I got from AA and these beliefs I got from AA permeate the work that I do. There's no other way I can do it. They're part of me. They're the biggest part of me. You know, Cranford works in the field. What do you bring to it? In the main. Randy, what do you bring to it in the main, you know? There's no getting away from that. Then am I or they making money off AA? Are we violating Tradition 8? Let's look at the bottom line. If I'm taking money for 12-step work, yes, sir. I've never taken a cent. Billy's never taken a cent. Randy's never taken a cent. For face-to-face, person-to-person, carrying the message to an alcoholic. Not once. Never will either. And yet some people say we professionals wear two hats, Bert. You'd have to have two heads. And I do. But one of them won't support a hat. But this ain't true. I'm going to say this tonight, and I want some of y'all to hear me. We no more wear two hats than some sober alcoholic who's working in a bank. His job fills his material needs as does mine. His AA work fills his spiritual needs, as does mine. I have a vocation, and I have an avocation, and certainly they interplay. But I never confuse the one with the other. Through professional work, you know, those of us who do it earn a living. Through 12-step work, we earn a life. No way of a difference. I done gone as far as I can go. Any questions? Remember, what you heard tonight was a perspective, which is subject to change. I'm not now, nor have I ever been, a guru or a priest or a master. I'm a drunk. And I hope to God my perspective does change from time to time. But what I've shared with you tonight is the best that I can do on this tradition from where I stand right now. Any questions? I must have put you to sleep or really overwhelmed you.
Thank you for overwhelming us, Tom. And I mean that. Appreciate it. Baskets are available there.